if you want to check it out later, you can. He preached for us, taught us Friday night, Saturday night, this morning, and in Sunday school. He gave a good way to vote, keep these issues in mind. That was really good. So he'll teach us again this morning about a little bit more about the history of our church. Now, I haven't covered any of this, the Civil War, in my Sunday school class at all. So this is something that we haven't even touched upon, to be honest, which is good, because then I don't have to.
Thank you, Pastor. Thank you. I do appreciate your pastor. I hope you do as well. I'd love to duplicate him and put him all over the state of New York. I think we'd make a significant impact on our state if we had more men like him. We're very thankful for him. I also serve, Arise Ministry is the name of my new ministry. I also serve as the director of the executive director of the New York Association of Christian Schools. And as such, we had the state education department come and visit with us in your school, your co-op. I would like to see them recognize the co-op as a school. They're not willing to do that at this point, but they were very impressed by what they saw. They got a tour. We took them out for lunch. Our NIACS board met with them. The NIACS board commended you as well. They were very impressed with the work that you're doing, and I do, too, want to commend you. And we did approve of you as members. So the Friendship Baptist Co-op is officially a member of the New York Association of Christian Schools. Now, that doesn't mean you can change what you're doing with the school districts and reporting and all that. I wish I could do that, but you can't at this point. But it does mean that we're recognizing you as a school, and we hope that you'll participate in things like our Fine Arts Festival, Student Leadership Conferences, and other activities that are going on during the course of the year. I wanted to say that. I also want to appreciate your support. I can always tell it's the first of the month because the check is right there in the mailbox. It's just amazing. And I think Mark is the one that does that, isn't he? He is always on the ball with that. And in spite of what he's going through, so I really just appreciate your faithful support. I have now about $958 a month support if it all came in. It doesn't. Because some will do it quarterly and some will do it catch me when you can. Sometimes, you know, I never know. I don't ask for it, so I can't say, hey, your check didn't come this month, but the commitment's to me. Then that enables me to go anywhere without worrying about an offering, and I really don't. I really live by faith, and God has really miraculously supplied for us. My wife and I are very, very thankful for churches like yours that stand behind us, and it's very, very important to us. You are the lifeline. You help us keep going, and we are very thankful for you. Sometimes I preach in a church, and they say, we're going to mail the love offering. I have two of them right now. I'm waiting still. It's been a few weeks. Sometimes it goes on longer, and if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, because I have churches like you that are standing behind us, and so that's very important. So I wanted to say those two things, lest I forget. Barbara would like to have been with me. She was really disappointed. You know, this one hit a little harder than most. Barb's mom came to live with us in April. She's 88 years old, and she's in reasonably good health, but she's had a few issues at the start. She was a little bit fearful about staying alone. We thought we'd get over that, and then she's had some health problems. She got some bad medicine that had a reaction to it, fell, injured her knee and her shoulder and her elbow and her wrist. And so we just can't leave her overnight. So Barb's not able to travel with me right now, but that's a prayer request. I'd like to be able to do that in the future. In the meantime, I am doing a lot of traveling. God's taken me from one side of the state to another. I've been in Long Island in September, all the way over to Jamestown, all the way up to north of Watertown. God keeps me moving all over, so thank you for praying for us. Next week, I will be at Faith Bible Church in Sprakers in the morning, and then on Monday and Tuesday, the non-public schools have a conference that is being held in Albany. I'll be there for 2 days. And they have an informal, commissioner has an advisory council for non-public schools. I'm hoping to get appointed to that. It's in the works. We'd like to have a seat at the table. Roger Ellison's been doing that. Roger's wife had a stroke in September. He's had to resign from NIACS. He was our president. And his full-time job now is taking care of his wife. So you might remember him in prayer. We'd like to have a seat at the table so we can keep an eye on what the state's doing to protect our school. The whole purpose is just protecting. The other people there are basically in it for what can we get out of the state, how much money can we get. We're really there to say, just leave us alone. Just let us educate our kids the way we see fit. That's really what we have in mind. Well, we've had a great, I've enjoyed the weekend. I hope you have as well. Friday night, we looked at the fact that we are founded by faith. America was born out of faith. It took faith to come here. It took faith to write a declaration declaring independence. Then we saw framed by faith last night that the founders came together. The turning point was Franklin's call for prayer. That's when they began to come together. They wrote a constitution that served us very well, and it's based on biblical principles. That's why it served us well. Then in the Sunday school hour, we talked about the elections. Now we're going to talk about the Civil War, America forged by faith. Steel, when it's developed, starts out as iron, and it's put in the fire forge in order to develop strength and become steel. And America has developed over the years by the wars which we've experienced. And you could look at any of the wars and you would see the hand of God in giving us the victory. That was true in the Revolutionary War, as we saw Friday night. That was true in the World War II, World War I. You can go through all of our wars and you can see the hand of God and the part faith played. I am considering writing and doing a PowerPoint on World War II because of the significance. Veterans Day, that, by the way, is coming up this week. Be sure you thank a veteran. How many veterans are here? All right. Thank you, gentlemen, for your service. We appreciate what you've done for us, and we're free because of the sacrifice and commitment that you made in years past. So we're very thankful for you. Well, the Civil War is what we're going to focus on this morning. And it's significant for a lot of different reasons. Jesus in Matthew chapter 19 said, "And Jesus knew their thoughts and said to them, every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and every city or house divided against itself shall not stand." A city, kingdom divided against itself will not stand. We looked on Friday night at the Declaration of Independence. And you'll see in what I put in bold there, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and have been endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these rights are life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. There is a built-in flaw in the Constitution that came to be, caused the conflict called the Civil War, and that is the problem of slavery. The Constitution dealt with slavery by saying, well, it's going to end eventually. We won't let Congress pass a law for 20 years. That's the next slide. But they also, the states, the House of Representatives based on population, the southern states wanted to count the slaves. Northern states, no, you can't do that. They end up counting three-fifths. It didn't mean they were not persons. It's just simply that's how they were counted for representation. But it does mean they kick the can down the road. You hear that phrase once in a while. What does it mean? Well, it means a problem so difficult, we're not going to deal with it now, but we'll wait 10 years or we'll wait down the road. The deficit, for instance. We are continuing to spend $500 million a year, more than we can, $500 trillion rather, more than we can pay. So $500 billion. And we keep saying, well, we'll let the next generation. In 2008, Barack Obama said the national debt at $9 trillion is a national disgrace. Of course, it was Bush's fault. The national debt now is going to exceed $20 trillion. And we're not hearing him say anything about it, what kind of disgrace it might be. In any event, slavery was not dealt with. They knew there was a problem. They knew slavery was not right. But they decided that we'll let the next generation take care of it. We'll let 20 years from now, Congress can do something. But not now. Here's what Jefferson said, who owned slaves. God who gave us life gave us liberty. And can the liberties of a nation be thought secure when we remove their only firm basis, that these liberties are a gift of God and are not to be trifled with except in his wrath? Indeed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just and his justice will not sleep forever. Jefferson was talking about slavery. He knew it wasn't right and knew God would judge. Our founding fathers really thought that slavery would just kind of die out. They thought they were advanced now. In fact, in the Declaration of Independence, Jefferson's original Declaration of Independence included a a charge that the king had forced slavery on the colonies. The Congress rewrote it and crossed that one out, but it was part of what he wrote originally. Washington, for instance, said, "I mean never to possess another slave by purchase. It be among my first wishes to see some plan adopted by which slavery in this country may be abolished by slow and sure and perceptible degrees." Somehow we got to figure out what to do with these slaves. There's a lot of slaves. If we just set them free, they won't be able to take care of themselves. They won't be able to make a living. What do we do with them? There's all kinds of plans that were developed over the years, but it was a problem. They knew it was a problem, and they really didn't know how to resolve it. This is the section of the Constitution that says they can't do anything for 20 years. Well, slavery didn't die out. It got worse because of the invention of the cotton gin. Cotton gin made cotton very profitable, but it's labor intensive, and you need cheap labor to make it profitable. And the cheapest labor of all, of course, is slavery. And so cotton became the number one crop in the South. And the phrase King Cotton became the dominant thing because that's where the money was. And slavery, the demand for slavery grew and increased. Tensions started developing right from the Revolutionary War, right up to the Civil War. One of the big things was the Missouri Compromise. Missouri and Maine both wanted to become states. One was slave, one was free. They said, all right, we'll let both states become states, but no more expansion of slavery to the West. Southern plantation owners wanted to migrate to the West. They wanted to take their slaves with them. And the Northerners said, no, we're not going to let slavery spread. The Southerners considered if we're fewer and fewer slave states, the North is going to intervene with us. So that's part of what happened. The Mason-Dixon line kind of divided North and South. And it's a phrase that you hear once in a while. Missouri, of course, becomes a hotbed for abolitionists and others. It really was a mess. Fugitive Slave Act in 1850 was passed by Congress, which made it lawful for bounty hunters or owners of slaves to go into free states, capture their escaped slaves, and bring them back. Now, I didn't mention in the earlier time, but this part of the country was very significant in what is called the Underground Railroad. The Underground Railroad was not a railroad. It was just a series of houses where slaves could get help. Now, part of what they, if you look at the culture of this, part of what they did was they made quilts that gave direction to the slaves. They'd tell them where a safe house was. There's all kinds of codes. You can go to Auburn, for instance. Harriet Tubman's house is there. You can go up to Watertown. You can go to Niagara Falls, and you'll see homes. There's still homes where they had secret compartments where slaves could be hid from the bounty hunters that would come. Now, the problem with the bounty hunters is all they had to do is destroy the papers. The escaped slave person could be set free, have papers showing that he's free. They wanted to get the bounty. They would take the person, destroy the papers, take him back. So there are all kinds of abuses that took place during this time. It was a bad thing. It did keep stirring things up. Uncle Tom's Cabin was the most popular book of the 19th century in America and in England. It told the story of Uncle Tom. Now, you all know Tony Saxon, my little black brother. Tony gets a kick out. I get a kick out of talking to his kids because when he introduces me, I'll say, "I'm your Uncle Tom." And, of course, they always snicker because Uncle Tom today is considered a black that's turned against his own people. But it did reveal what slavery, the reality of slavery. Now, in my life, it was really the thing that really brought this home to me as a young pastor was the blizzard of either 77 or 78 and the TV series Roots. We were snowed in for a week. I lived in the country then. Our church was thinking, I was snowed in for a whole week, both years. And one of those years, ABC television had Roots. One night after, we watched the whole series. I don't think that would have been possible otherwise. But it did bring home the reality of what slavery was like. Slavery is an evil thing. Slavery is still being practiced in parts of the world today. People sometimes think slavery is a thing of the past. No, it's not. ISIS, for instance, is capturing young girls. Some of the Muslim militants in Africa, there was a school of 230, a Christian home that the girls were captured. Recently, they'd just been restored to their families. But a lot of bad things are happening around the world. White slavery happens here in the United States as well. So it's still happening. But it did stir up things. There were a lot of preachers that were anti-slavery. In the South, there were pro-slavery preachers, and they stirred up the people pretty good. The Dred Scott decision was a landmark decision by the U.S. Supreme Court that held African Americans, whether enslaved or free, could not be American citizens, and therefore had no standing to sue in federal court. Dred Scott was considered property, not a person, according to the Supreme Court. Now, recently somebody said anything the Supreme Court does is constitutional. Boy, is that not true. They were wrong. Here's what Abraham Lincoln said about this decision. If the policy of the government upon vital questions affecting the whole people is to be irrevocably fixed by decisions of the Supreme Court the instant they are made, the people will have ceased to be their own rulers, having to that extent practically resigned their government to the hands of that eminent tribunal. Justice Scalia said concerning the same-sex marriage decision, this decision says that my ruler and the ruler of 300 million Americans is 9 unelected judges on the Supreme Court. This court has made mistakes in the past. Now, this one took a civil war to correct. Roe v. Wade decided that babies could be aborted by their mothers. It was a mistake, and it needs to be corrected. Well, John Brown's raid. John Brown was an abolitionist. He got the idea that he could go to Virginia, hit Harper's Ferry, the arsenal there, confiscate the weapons, and the blacks would rise up, gather to him, gather the weapons, and fight for their freedom, and he would start a revolution. That was his idea. He took 20 men with him. He knew he wouldn't have enough weapons for all the slaves, so he took pikes, spears. Wagons with spears. The man was, as they say, a couple bricks short of a load. He ended up captured, was hung, but his presence, what happened, really stirred things up. Things are getting very hot. The Lincoln-Douglas debates primarily had to do with slavery. These two men, Douglas was a great debater called the Little Giant. Lincoln was a homespun, plain man, simple humor, and debates were publicized across America, and again, people were discussing the evils of slavery or whether it should be set free or continued. 1860, the presidential election resulted in, the Whig Party that had existed had gone out of existence. Republicans nominated Abraham Lincoln, famous primarily by the Lincoln-Douglas debates 2 years earlier. And then the Democrats nominated two different people. They were split. Southern Democratic Party nominated Breckinridge, and the Northern Democratic Party nominated Douglas. And then there was a third party, Constitutional Union Party as well. The end result of that is Lincoln won the election. That was the beginning, really, of the Civil War. The South immediately began to secede, Southern states. The first was South Carolina. You heard of the Bonnie Blue Flag. There's a picture of it with a single star. They were saying, we're going to be separate from the Union. Their proclamation says, in part, the geographical line has been drawn across the Union. The states north of that line have united in election of a man to the high office of President of the United States, whose opinion and purposes are hostile to slavery. So there are people today that will say, it's not about slavery. Well, slavery was the issue. Slavery was an issue that divided us. I don't think it was the main cause, though. I'll get to that in just a second. As far as the causes, here's what happened. The southern states, seven of them succeeded right away. Houston, by the way, had been president of Texas and then governor. He was opposed to secession. He ended up dying in disappointment after what happened when Texas withdrew. Southern states, you can't see it very well there, four states joined. Eventually it becomes 11 states. Sometimes the Confederate flag has 13 stars, but they're counting some that were borderline states and never really did withdraw. The war had a cause called secession. Now, the start of the war, it wasn't about slavery. The start of the war is about secession. Do states have the right to secede from the Union or not? I have a daughter in Texas. The Texas Constitution allows them to vote every so often as to whether they want to stay in the Union or not. I don't know what would happen if they voted out. I'm very curious about that. But Lincoln, for instance, said, when the states entered into a union, they essentially formed a binding compact. For that compact to be broken, all the states must agree to its dissolution, not just a handful of them. Preservation of the union is far more important than the complaints of individual states. The country would be weaker if it was divided in two. So the cry from the North was, save the Union. Lincoln immediately called for 70,000 troops to defend the Union. And so that was the northern side. Southern side, Jeff Davis is elected in the newly formed Confederate States of America. It's called that from, they adopted basically what the Articles of Confederation were. It didn't work before. They said, we're going to, this is what we should have stuck with. 13, they said it would be 13, it never got that many, but we'll be a confederacy, not a union. Here's what he said. The federal government is instituting policies that go against the best interests of the South, such as tariffs that disproportionately hurt the South, attempts to free the slaves who work on Southern plantations, just as colonists had the right to declare independence from Britain nearly a century ago. The South has a right to secede its independence from the Union. So the issue has to do with secession. Can a state withdraw from the Union or not? The North said no, the South said yes. Now, both sides had a good point. There's nothing in the Constitution that says once you join, you can't get out. None of the states really anticipated that. It really had not been dealt with at all. So it really was not anticipated. But the real cause, I think, is spiritual. Abraham Lincoln said in 1863, insomuch as we know that by his divine laws, nations like individuals are subject to punishments and chastisements in this world, may we not justly fear the awful calamity of civil war which now desolates the land may be but a punishment inflicted upon us for our presumptuous sins to the needful end of our national reformation as a whole people. We have been the recipients of the choicest bounties of heaven. We have been preserved these many years in peace and prosperity. We have grown in numbers, wealth, and power as no other nation has ever grown. But we have forgotten. Now, if that were true in 1863, what about today? When that's why this is pertinent. And you look at our, we don't learn from history. We've been shoving God out of our lives as a nation. It's still present. I mean, God is still present. We still see, you know, the president giving a speech and ending it with God bless America. Every president in my lifetime has said that. But we're living in a time when God is being crowded out. We are forgetting God, and God's the one who gave us the blood. So I think the main cause was spiritual. And think about it. Here were people that worshiped the same God, that read the same Bible, came to different conclusions, and couldn't live together in peace. That's a spiritual problem. When churches split, it's almost always a spiritual problem because it's the same God, same Holy Spirit, same Bible. Why can't you get together and figure things out together? Well, both sides would say that the war was about faith, family, and freedom. If you would ask the common soldier, Confederate soldier, he would not say he was fighting for slavery. Most of them never owned a slave, didn't have anything to do with slaves. Some of them worked alongside slaves. The Union soldier, same thing. He wouldn't have said he was fighting to free the slaves. He would say he was fighting for what? Faith, family, and freedom. That's what it was about. Let me illustrate that. Robert E. Lee said, in all my perplexities and distresses, the Bible has never failed to give me light and strength. U.S. Grant said, hold fast to the Bible, to the influence of this book. We are indebted for all the progress made by true civilization, and we must look at it as our guide in the future. So read the Bible. Lincoln said the Bible's God's greatest gift to mankind. So what else? Family. Brigadier General Lewis A. Armistead led the charge at Pickett's Charge. He was one of the main generals. Said to his men before they made that charge, Virginians, Virginians, for your land, your homes, your sweethearts, for your wives, for Virginia, forward march. The South thought of themselves as defending their family from Northern aggression. That was a part of what it was. South would say, we're fighting for our families. Freedom, Jeff Davis said, all we ask is to be left alone. Doesn't that sound familiar today? I think, you know, just leave us alone. You never had authority over us. Don't try and do it now. You read the quote yourself there. And so we've got to resist that. We can't do it. So that's all a part of what it is. Now, when the southern states seceded, they claimed the forts that were owned by the federal government in their proper, in their states, within their states, outside of Charleston Harbor was Fort Sumner. The Confederate Army demanded surrender. The Union general refused, or commandant refused. Shots were fired, the first shots of the Civil War. Just shortly, Lincoln took office in March. Less than a month later, the Civil War was on. The Battle of Manassas, or Bull Run, depending on whether you're from the south or the north, we even call the names different. We don't even really, to this day, agree on the name of the war. In the north, we call it the Civil War. In the south, they call it the War Between the States. Or if they're really radical Southerners, they call it the War of Northern Against, Northern Aggression. That's how it works. Manassas, Bull Run, was confusion. The North thought it would be a short conflict. So the ladies and gentlemen of Washington, government officials, rode out in their buggies with picnic lunches to watch our boys whip those Rebs. It didn't turn out that way. The South had a lot of generals that were trained at West Point that were sharp. In fact, the North always lacked generals until they came along with Grant. Until that point, the South dominated. Lee had been the commandant at West Point, so most of the generals he faced, he had taught as their teacher. So he knew how they would think and how they would react in battle. And Bull Run, there's no standard uniform. The blue and gray hasn't developed yet. That hasn't happened. The suave uniform was very popular, which is this French Legion kind of thing. It's kind of, to us it looks kind of silly, but that was a very popular thing. Well, the flags are not standard, the uniform's not standard, and there's black powder where you get a lot of smoke from cannon and from muskets. So sometimes in the confusion of battle, friendly troops would shoot at each other, and the whole thing was a mess. The Union troops finally broke, ran for Washington. There was a panic. The war was on. It's going to be bloody. Shiloh showed how bloody it was going to be in April of 1862. The worst battle of the year, of the war, was Antietam, the bloodiest day in American history, where there were 2,100 Union soldiers killed, 1,550. But look at the number of wounded. 9,550 Union troops, 7,750. Now, the bullets used were not standard. There was no standardized weapon, but most of them were around 50, 55 caliber bullets. That meant when a musket ball hit a man in the arm or the leg, you basically had to take off the arm or the leg. There was no repair. It was just a matter of taking it off. They did not understand at the beginning of the war about germs. So they set up army tents, put a table out, brought in a wounded soldier, sawed off whatever limb needed to be sawed off, threw a bucket of water on the table to wash away the blood, threw the leg out the door, put him out, brought another one in, laid him in, started all over again using the same tools and infection. A lot of these men that were wounded died. So the casualties were extremely high. Can you imagine this kind of casualty? It just blows my mind. Chancellorsville was another major battle. We can't look at all of them. We're just looking at some of the conflicts of the war. Chancellorsville was significant because Stonewall Jackson was killed. Lee called him his right-hand man. Jackson got his name at Bull Run, where another general looked up and saw him on the hill and said, "Look at Jackson standing like a stone wall." The name stuck. His name was actually Thomas Jackson, and he became well-known. Well, he at Chancellorsville, after the first day of the battle, he went out to reconnoiter with some of his officers. He put on a black cloak, came back into the Confederate lines. A sentry thought he was a Union soldier and shot, and eventually he died. His last words were, "Let us cross over to the other side of the river and rest a while in the shade of the tree." You know, he was a born-again Christian, and he really lived out his faith. That's why he was a stone wall. He wasn't afraid of dying. Had incredible courage, and one of the men we admire. Amistad is one who was a participant of Pickett's charge at Gettysburg. My great-grandfather fought on the Union side at the Stone Wall. He was right in the center of the Union line. The Union line was a fish hook, and right at the very center, Lee decided to attack right down the center. As they lined up in the trees, Confederate Army, four brigades lined up on the tree line, marched across the field, at times at double quick, double pace, had to cross the road. There were two fences they had to get over. They had to go up the side. And they had thought that the artillery would soften up the Union troops. It didn't. They fell short. Either fell short or went over the heads of the Union soldiers. And so they faced the full charge. My great-grandfather told my grandfather the stories, and he in turn told me when I was a boy of some of the stories of his experience. My great-grandfather said their muskets or rifles got so hot that the barrels would burn their hands. Their hands were burnt from the heat of shooting and shooting. They said the Confederates lined up like they were on parade, clear across. Can you imagine how terrifying that would be, to be facing an army like that? The Confederate soldiers did break through the line, but there was not enough left to actually hold that breach. And Union troops came in the battle. Amistad himself was killed. The commandant on the Union side was his best friend at West Point. So the tragedy of the war is set brother against brother, friend against friend. It was a terrible thing. One of my favorite heroes was Joshua Chamberlain, who was defending Round Top. He was from Maine. He was an English professor. He was promoted because he was educated to be a lieutenant colonel. He was a colonel at this time, eventually became a general. He was president at Appomattox. You'll see his picture in a little bit. He wrote a journal of his stories. At Little Round Top, he resisted a rebel charge. He was told to hold the position at all cost. He held out three charges against the Alabama troops. The lieutenants came to him and said, "We're almost out of ammunition. What do we do?" He said, "Well, we're tired, but they've got to be more tired than they are. They're running uphill. We're going to mount a charge." So he told his men to put their bayonets on and go down the hill. He won the day, captured over 300 Confederate soldiers, and held indeed for another day. Had his position been overrun, the war probably would have been over. The same time as Gettysburg, there was another battle being waged. That was in the west at Vicksburg, which gave the North control of the Mississippi. Gettysburg is considered the high point of the Confederacy. The war should have ended right then, but Meade, who was the Union general, rested while Lee was allowed to evacuate his troops back to Virginia. Had he pursued them, they would have probably won the war at that point. Vicksburg, though, gave control of the Mississippi. It meant the North controlled commerce up and down the Mississippi, blocking off the Western Confederate states from the Eastern Confederate states. The war's winding down in some ways. Sherman's march to the sea, my grandfather was in that as well. Sherman said war is hell, and he made it that. He said he would make Georgia howl, and he did. He marched to Atlanta, burned it to the ground, continued on to Savannah, a 100-mile swath. My grandfather described burning of farms, crops, anything that they couldn't take with them was destroyed or used, was destroyed, breaking the back of the South. That was what it was about. Then they turned to the North, went through South Carolina, North Carolina, and eventually ended up in Appomattox. Fall of Richmond happened in April 2nd, 1865. Surprisingly, the two capitals, Washington and Richmond, are not that far apart. So it's a kind of surprising thing Richmond held out that long. Jeff Davis had to flee for his life, and a few weeks later, Lee surrendered at Appomattox Courthouse. Lee had done what he could do. He understood that his men were not well fed now. They were running out of ammunition. Their clothing was in tatters. They didn't have boots or shoes for their feet. Any further conflict would spill blood unnecessarily. So Lee sent a letter to Grant saying, "What are their terms of surrender?" Grant sent back a brief reply, "Unconditional surrender." Grant's actual name is Hiram Ulysses Grant, but from that time on, he becomes U.S. Grant, U.S. Unconditional Surrender Grant. The terms were surprisingly generous, probably because Lincoln had instructed him that way. Officers were allowed to keep their sidearms and their horses. Common soldiers were allowed to, had to turn in their rifles, but were paroled immediately. No one was to be punished. No one was to be arrested. They had to take an oath to the United States. They would not take up arms against the United States again, and they were told to go home. Now, you can imagine what this is like. How do you get home? You walk. Okay? That's it. There's no food supply. Grant did send troops, send food to the Confederate troops as soon as the surrender had been signed. This picture is really a startling picture. When Grant came in kind of disheveled, a little mud on his uniform, Lee came in with his finest uniform, boots polished, and was very much a gentleman. Lee was an outstanding man. The cost of the Civil War was tremendous. You can see, for instance, Gettysburg's over 51,000 casualties. 620-some thousand people were killed. I have traveled to the South, have friends down the South, and I had one of my friends say, "We won the war." I said, "Really? How do you figure that?" He said, "Well, we killed more of you than you killed of us." And he was right. The Southerners did kill more. Now, part of what happened in the war is units were basically from the same neighborhood. A town, a village, a county would raise a regiment. My grandfather fought with men from Troy. They were from his neighbors. That's who he fought with. The tactics were not advanced. They were still using Napoleon tactics, but their weapons had a greater range than Napoleon ever thought of. So the tactics were incredible. The two armies would meet mostly by accident and slug it out, and the one remaining standing at the end of the day was the winner. But you can imagine the courage of standing row by row, file by file, shooting, trading shots at the guy from the other side. No cover, most cases. They did sometimes see cover, but 620,000 people. Plus, there's a lot more than that because it doesn't count for all those who died from wounds after the war itself. It was our bloodiest war, 620,000 compared to World War II, the second greatest at 400,000. So you can see the tremendous numbers. War is an expensive thing. What are the consequences of the war? Well, number one, the release of the slaves. However, there are millions of slaves. What happens to them? What do you do with them? You're free. So, now what? How do you make a living? Where do you live? You know, there's all kinds of abuses that take place afterwards as people take advantage of these folks. Many of them were uneducated because it was unlawful to teach a slave how to read. They knew how to farm because they had done that, but they'd been told what to do. So now they're on their own. It's a tough thing. One slave wrote, "We knowed freedom was on us, but we didn't know what was to come with it." They really didn't. Reconstruction would have been very different had Lincoln lived. Of course, he was assassinated. Lincoln had said in his inaugural address just the month before the surrender, "With malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right, let us strive to finish the work which we are in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who hath borne the battle, and for his widow, his orphan, and to all which may achieve a cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and among all nations." So basically, Lincoln's attitude, we are brothers, we had a disagreement, we fought it out, now we need to come together. He also mentioned caring for the veterans. What is happening to our veterans in the last few years at the VA is a national tragedy and should be corrected. Lincoln was concerned taking care of the veterans. We have a debt to them that should be paid and should be taken care of. However, Lincoln was assassinated, and there were people in the Congress, radical Republicans, that wanted the South punished, and so a lot of bad things happened. A lot of the resentment in the South about the war is not from the war itself, but from the Reconstruction. It's really where some of that came from and still exists. There is a resolve that should be a consequence. Lincoln said it best in his Gettysburg Address, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from off the earth. Now you notice Lincoln said we're one nation under God. saying, we need to keep that perspective. We're under God, God's authority. But he said, we need to resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. I think we ought to repeat that at every Veterans Day, every Memorial Day, that these dead shall not have died in vain, and resolve that our country is going to remain free. There was a revival as a consequence of the war. By the end of the war, it's estimated 100,000 Confederate soldiers in the Army of Northern Virginia alone surrendered to the Lord. This book is Christ in the Camp, was written by a Confederate chaplain. He tells of great revivals. General Lee, General Jackson, other Confederate generals insisted that their troops hear the gospel before they went into battle. So chaplains were instructed to preach the gospel. Great tent meetings were held, great revival camp meetings were held. Multitudes came to Christ during the war. You can imagine you're facing a battle where you may not survive tomorrow, and you hear the gospel, you might be motivated to receive Christ as Savior. These men wrote to their girlfriends, their wives, and told them what had happened. Many of them were saved after the war. Of course, they are concerned. There's still revival. They lost. The whole way of life is changing. When people are in that kind of condition, when you're on your back, you have only one direction to look, and that's up. And they did. So to this day, we still call that the southern states the Bible Belt. Still has a big impact. In the north, it was similar things, not quite to the extent it was in the south, where evangelists preached the gospel. Chaplains preached. D.L. Moody got his start in the Civil War preaching to the troops. There were groups that would volunteer, laymen that would go and follow the camps and would preach the gospel, give out tracts. You can still buy those tracts that were printed back then that shared the gospel with people. Moody, after the war, would begin citywide crusades, preaching to tens of thousands of people at a time. The newspapers would run his sermons in whole on the front page when he came to town. It was the Philadelphian age. It was an age of tremendous growth as far as the church is concerned. The challenge. Well, today, we're divided again as a nation. In many ways, almost as bad as the Civil War. I don't think Tuesday's election is going to settle it. No matter who's elected, I think it's going to continue. So, but today, it's not both sides believing in the same God, reading the same Bible. It's people that are anti-God, anti-Bible. The battle for us is still about faith, family, and freedom. That's our cause. Faith, what we believe, it's important. The ability to practice what we believe, not only in our churches, but in our homes and our businesses, out in the public. Family's under attack today, being redefined. Two men, two women, etc. We need to remember God designed the family. And then faith itself. The ability to believe and preach the gospel in freedom. So I think the commitment we need to make as Christians is to stand for faith, family, and freedom. Heavenly Father, thank you for our heritage. We have a rich Christian heritage, as we've seen this weekend. Lord, something awful has happened to us as a nation. We seem to be turning our back on the God who made us a nation. We're forgetting we're one nation, indivisible, liberty and justice for all, because we're a nation under God. And as Reagan said, it was quoted earlier today, if we ever forget we're one nation under God, we'll become a nation gone under. Lord, help us to turn our nation back to you. Help us to do our part for faith, family, and freedom. In Jesus' name, amen. God bless you. Thank you.
Is